3. Royal Palace, City of Manchir, Princedom of Coruscant. Sir Corin Garvey sighed with relief as he entered the palace's heat-shedding bulk and got out of the direct path of the sun's ferocity. November was always warm in Manchir, but this November seemed determined to set a new standard. "Which we don't exactly need on top of everything else," he thought, as he strode briskly down the hall. "Langhorne knows we've got enough other things generating warmth all over the damned princedom." Indeed they did, and Garvey was, unfortunately, in a far better position to appreciate that minor fact than he might have preferred. The guards standing outside the council chamber door came to attention at his approach, and he nodded back, acknowledging the military courtesy. He recognized both of them. They'd been part of his headquarters detachment before that unpleasantness at Talbor Pass, which was the main reason they'd been chosen for their present duty. Just at the moment, the number of people he could trust behind him with a weapon was limited, to say the least, he thought, as he passed through the garden door. "Sorry I'm late," he said as his father looked up from a conversation with Earl Tartarian. "Alec's latest report arrived just as I was getting ready to leave my office."
"Don't worry about it," his father said just a bit sourly. "You haven't really missed much, since it's not like we've managed to accomplish a whole hell of a lot so far today."
Garvey wished the sourness in that response could have come as a surprise, but Sir Rysel Garvey, the Earl of Anvil Rock, had a lot to feel sour about. As the senior of the two designated co-regents for Prince Divan, he'd wound up head of the prince's regency council, which had to be the most thankless task in the entire princedom. Well, probably aside from Sir Corin Garvey's new assignment, that was. If there were 6 nobles in the entire princedom who genuinely believed Anvil Rock hadn't cut some sort of personal deal with Caleb Armagh, Garvey didn't have a clue who they might be. Aside from Tartarian, who was probably as thoroughly detested these days as Anvil Rock himself, Garvey could think of exactly 3 of the deceased Prince Hector's counselors who genuinely believed Anvil Rock and Tartarian weren't solely out for themselves. Fortunately, Sir Raymond Lindar, who continued to serve as the Keeper of the Purse, was one of those 3. The other 2, Edware Garthen, the Earl of North Coast, and Truman Southman, the Earl of Aerith, had both agreed to serve on the Regency Council as well, although with a marked lack of enthusiasm on North Coast's part, because they'd realized someone had to do it. Archbishop Claremont Gerling, whose position automatically made him a member of the council as well, appeared to agree with North Coast and Aerith where Anvil Rock and Tartarian were concerned, but he'd never been one of Hector's counselors. The council's final 2 members, the Duke of Margot and the Earl of Craggy Hill, neither of whom were present at the moment, had held positions on Hector's council and shared the rest of the nobility's general suspicion about Anvil Rock's and Tartarian's motives to the full. "Not having them here today isn't going to make them any happier when they find out about this meeting either," Garvey thought, as he walked across to his own place at the circular council table. "On the other hand, I can't think of anything that would make them happy." Sir Berriman Chalmers, the Duke of Margot, was the Regency Council's highest-ranking nobleman. He'd also been a distant, very distant, cousin of Prince Hector, and it probably wasn't too surprising that he resented having a mere earl as Divan's regent instead of himself. Wallace Hillkeeper, the Earl of Craggy Hill, on the other hand, was quite a different breed of kraken. It was entirely possible Margot nursed a few ambitions of his own under the circumstances. Garvey didn't think he did, but he well might, and not without at least some justification, given the current irregular circumstances. Yet if there was an edge of doubt about him in Garvey's mind, there was none at all about Craggy Hill. The Earl's ambition was far more poorly hidden than he obviously thought it was, despite the fact that, unlike Margot, he possessed not even a shred of a claim on the crown. The good news was that the two of them were outnumbered 6-2 whenever it came down to a vote. The bad news was that their very inability to influence the council's decisions had only driven them closer together. Worse, one of them, at least one of them, was leaking his own version of the council's deliberations to outside ears. Which probably explains why Father didn't make any particular effort to get the two of them here today, Garvey reflected. Actually, Rysel, saying we haven't accomplished anything today isn't entirely fair, Tartarian said in a rather milder tone.
Oh, forgive me, Anvil Rock rolled his eyes. So far we've managed to agree on how big a stipend to set aside for Divan from his own income. Of course we haven't figured out how we're going to get it to him, but I'm sure we'll come up with something eventually. I realize you're probably even more worn out with all of this than I am, Tartarian said, and I don't blame you either. But the truth is that we've at least managed to handle the correspondence from General Cherman. Handle? Anvil Rock repeated. Just exactly how did we handle that, Terrell? If I recall correctly, it was more a matter of getting our marching orders than handling anything.
Obviously, Garvey thought, his father was in one of his moods, not surprisingly.
I'd scarcely call them marching orders, Tartarian replied calmly. And neither would you if you weren't so busy pitching a snit.